Welcome to Inside the Match, where Alex and Simone talk residency applications.
We are two residents here to help you navigate the match.
For each podcast, we'll bring you residents from various specialties and backgrounds to give advice. So today we are so excited to have Dr. Hendershot, who is an ophthalmology program director. So thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So where are you an attending physician?
So I'm an attending physician and program director for ophthalmology at The Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. It's called the Havener Eye Institute in Columbus, Ohio.
So we like to start our podcast with some rapid fire questions to just get to know you. So were you AOA in medical school?
I was not.
Were you gold humanism?
Was not.
And do you have like any funny interview stories to share or any deficiencies in your own residency application during your journey?
So my journey is somewhat unique and not recommended, I guess. I thought I wanted to do ophthalmology in medical school, did not love it. If you are a medical student and have rotated through ophthalmology, sometimes it's not the most fun and exciting rotation. There's not, you know, you're not necessarily saving lives. You're not getting your hands super dirty. So I actually sort of fell out of love and went into general surgery. And then partway through my general surgery internship, realized that I probably was right all along and had made my decision for the wrong reasons. And so began looking at paths back. That looked, you know, I looked at getting an MBA for a couple of years. I looked at research, looked at working. And then as luck would have it, a position actually opened up in a program, someone that switched out of ophthalmology, which is incredibly rare, but happens. And so I interviewed for that. So a very, you know, convoluted, long way to get to ophthalmology. So all my SF match, you know, application kind of stuff is more from the program director side, because I actually applied through the NRMP for general surgery.
Well, it's neat to see that you ended up back in a specialty and are now program director. And so there are so many different routes to get to where someone should ultimately be. And it's neat that you were able to share that. We appreciate that as well. So you mentioned the San Francisco ophthalmology match, which does differ from the normal NRMP. So can you describe a little bit about how this match works and how it might differ from other specialties that our colleagues might be applying to?
I mean, the biggest difference to highlight, if you're not super familiar, is that it's an early match. So the timeline is, you know, shifted up several months from maybe everyone else in your medical school. That timeline shifted a little back with COVID, but we're expecting it to shift kind of back forward. That just means thinking about letters of rec a little bit earlier, working on personal statements a little bit earlier, and just kind of being aware of what's going on. The SF match has a great website. They have timelines spelled out, when to start working on things and all that kind of thing. The nice thing about it from a customer standpoint, and we as a program are customers and you as an applicant would be a customer, it's a lot smaller. I mean, I know on a first name basis with people at the SF match when we have meetings, you know, they come and report to the program directors and chairs. You know, I've sat down and had a meal and a drink with some of the people at the SF match. And so it's great for our standpoint. Like I literally can, you know, email or text somebody and be like, hey, I've got a question about X, Y, and Z. And they get back to us, you know, that day or the next day. So that small kind of atmosphere is really nice. They also are very accountable to the ophthalmology match. It gets audited every year. You know, a couple of program directors from across the country go to San Francisco and audit the match results, making sure that, you know, everyone matched to the best possible place that they could have matched and so on. So that's kind of a unique, aspect of it. It is similar to the NRMP, I think, all online. You know, you're uploading your letters of recommendation, filling out your application online. And then they started doing scheduling and actually their own interview platform, with the virtual interviews last year.
Well, that all sounds great, especially the part about earlier, matching earlier and getting to know that information when other colleagues are just waiting for March to match. That sounds like a great part about
it. It is. I think it can make, you know, your match day, depending on what your med school does, everyone gets their envelopes and like all the ophthalmology people are like, bah, we already know. Can be a little, I mean, you used to find out your internship then, so there was still some excitement. But I think, you know, I like the early part of it. It can make couples matching a little difficult. If you are couples matching, bring it up. We're technically, as interviewers, not allowed to ask about significant others, anything like that. So some people put it in their application somewhere. Some people bring it up. And then we try to kind of facilitate that. I work with all the program directors at OSU, and we have couples trying to match, saying, hey, we've got this great applicant at Optho. They have a significant other who's applying to your program. You know, what do you think? So on and so forth. So that's probably something important to know if you're trying to match with somebody else.
That is really helpful to know, because the couples match is an additional stressor. And you mentioned, you know, being an applicant in ophthalmology, and typically an ophthalmology applicant is competitive. And I'm just questioning, you know, what makes the most competitive ophthalmology applicant? Are these, you know, leadership opportunities, volunteerism, research, away rotations? What are you looking for as a program director?
Yeah, I mean, all of that, as bad as that sounds. The USMLE score, as you know, is kind of going away. That used to be kind of a screener for a lot of programs, just because we get so many applications. We are a larger residency program, so we take 6 residents a year. And we had last year 600 and some applications. So in order to sort through that, a lot of programs used to use kind of, a step one cut, just to kind of help narrow down the field a little bit. That's obviously going away. So programs, you know, across the country are looking at other things. I think we still want to see that you're academically strong. If that's, not step scores, looking at honors and core rotations, showing, you know, publications and, you know, presentations helps as well. And for me, you know, program directors probably look for different things than chairs or different things than some faculty. I'm looking for people with a track record that can show persistent hard work, you know, leadership, overcoming hardships, being dedicated to a cause. So I don't want someone that's volunteered at 15 different things once. You know, I would prefer someone who volunteered at one thing, you know, 15 times or for 15 years, or, you know, I mean, just a track record of kind of being able to stick something out for the long haul. As great as ophthalmology is, residency is tough no matter what you do. And so I, as a program director, want to know that someone's going to make it and has, you know, a track record of doing that in the past.
And you describe the importance of this holistic applicant, in that USMLE scores may not be as important as they used to be. But I wonder if you have any tips for someone that is really worried about their lower standardized test score, whether that be step two or whether that be a deficiency in their overall application within a course in medical school. Are there any recommendations that you have for those types of applicants?
Yeah, I mean, and I, you know, I've counseled a lot of medical students in this situation, kind of at our own program or from other programs, you know, virtually. It's not an absolute deal breaker, but I would say, you know, you need to find and kind of highlight or flesh out kind of the next best thing of your application. So if you didn't get the best board scores, or you're not honoring in your rotations, you know, try to highlight, you know, have you been really productive research wise or volunteer wise? You know, try to find letter writers that can really speak to some other aspects of things. I mean, I don't expect everyone to get 99th percentile in their in-service, and they certainly don't. The other things, you know, to highlight about yourself would be good teamwork, you know, someone who comes in early and stays late, someone who helps others, you know, so try to kind of build yourself up in other ways. And the personal statement's a good way to highlight that, using letter writers that know you well, you know, and can speak to some of that. If you struggled during, you know, if you had problems in your personal professional life, you know, around rotations or step scores, and that's kind of a setback, you know, someone that is comfortable speaking to that, if it's not yourself, to just kind of, you know, walk the reader of your application past a, hey, you know, look, I didn't do great on this, but I did do great on that. And I would not, you know, you don't necessarily want to highlight bad things, but we're going to see, you know, and look for and note that that kind of stuff is not there. So one of the big red flag for me and a lot of faculty, I think, on applications is someone who has a red flag and doesn't acknowledge it, like just tries to sort of like, oh, I was in med school for 5 years. I'm not going to talk about that at all. You know, it's better, I think, to just come out and say, you know, I didn't do well on step one and it was a terrible disappointment. I opened my letter. I was sad. I, you know, did some deep diving. I talked to my mentors. I came up with a plan. You know, I have a plan of attack, and this is how I you know, faced that kind of, you know, step back or hurdle and overcame it. And this is my plan. And this is what I'm going to do going forward.
That's really important for everyone to consider. And something that relates to that is the personal statement, which is a time that you, like you said, can acknowledge some of these deficiencies and how you've learned from them. But another struggle that a lot of applicants have is what else to write about. And so brainstorming these topics, especially in the summer prior to application season, is the ultimate time to start doing that. So I'm wondering if you have any recommendations for those that might be stuck with trying to determine what exactly they can talk about.
Yeah, I think the best advice I've heard is actually from our med student educator, Dr. Mike Wells. We have a session where we meet at OSU with all the med students interested and then applying to ophthalmology. And we just sit down with them and go through kind of stuff like you and I are now. So this is great to be able to do this for others and answer questions, talk about stuff. And so at the personal statement page of the, you know, we literally flip page by page through the application. Mike always says, start writing yours before you read anybody else's. And I think that's great advice if you hear it early enough. Because as soon as you read a couple, you're like pigeonholing kind of, oh, this is, I need to make mine like this person's, but sort of like me. And so I think once you've read somebody's, you're more inclined to write yours like that. So I would just start fresh. I mean, the things that I think you want your personal statement to be memorable. So when the faculty, as we do, and I'm sure most programs do, we interview, you know, we have numerical ranks, we talk amongst ourselves in kind of a group format. So how did your interview go with, you know, Simone? How did your interview go? What did you guys learn? You know, it's good to be, oh, is that the person that, you know, wrote about X, Y, and Z, or is that the person that had this happen? So use it to highlight what sets you apart. The field, I'm sure for all specialties, but especially for competitive specialties, like ophthalmology and some others, is really rich, meaning there are, you know, I mean, we went through my own track record, right? No AOA, no global humanism. So I wouldn't be a great applicant at this point. And so there's, I mean, there's just, you know, the hundreds of applicants who have honors and AOA and this and that, but use your personal statement to highlight what's different about you. What can you bring to a program that no one else can? What have you been through that people haven't been through? Or what's something about yourself that isn't showing up elsewhere? You know, there's a section for research, there's a section for publication, there's a section for volunteer and hobbies, but what is there something, you know, that you want us to know about you or something that you can bring that someone else can't?
Yes, no, that is a great way to look at ERAS as well and the San Francisco Match application, and that there's so many things that you can add on and list. And the personal statement is that way to make yourself look unique and make yourself look special as an applicant, which is key. So, you know, a lot of the times we want to be able to show interest in a specific program, especially if it's a program that's one of the top ones on our list. And I'm wondering how you would advise an applicant to do this.
Pre-pandemic answer as best as possible is to rotate there or try and rotate there. A lot of programs, ours included, did some virtual away rotations. So that would be, you know, maybe the best way. The SF Match started this past year, allowing applicants to customize personal statements. Certainly the vast majority of applicants did not, but we certainly saw some, and not all our faculty knew it was possible. So they're like, oh my gosh, this person wrote about Ohio State in their personal statement. It's amazing. You know, and we're like, well, so that's, you know, new. Unfortunately, people apply to a ton of programs. And so I don't think you want to write an entirely new personal statement for, you know, 40, 50, 60 programs or whatever. But there is the opportunity to, you know, if there are a handful of programs that you are really interested in, you know, what a lot of people did is tack on, you know, a paragraph towards the end or at the end that's like, and at Ohio State, because of X, Y, and Z, or I have family there, or I rotated there, I'm interested in there, or, you know, you have that opportunity. You can also do that with personal state or with letters of rec through the SF Match. So you submit three, but you can have, I think, up to 10 or something like that loaded. And so you can say, like, I want, you know, this letter to go to, you know, these three to OSU and these three to Michigan and these three to Iowa or whatever. I mean, I don't think you want to ask 10 people to write letters, but if you had a program you were really targeting and you, you know, had a mentor who was willing to comment on that or who rotated there or knows people there, you know, you would have that opportunity. And then the last thing would be, you know, reach out to the program coordinators. The SF Match site, I think, has that capability. And most websites, you know, like our coordinator and manager and my emails are kind of on our website. So reach out to the program coordinator and say, you know, I'm interested in this is why. We get a fair amount of those. I'm not trying to get more necessarily, but we do a pretty good job of, I think, sorting out like who is just kind of spam interest and who has legit, you know, this is why, you know, it may not come across in my program. You know, the ones that speak to me often are geographical. So like, you know, I may have, you know, done undergrad in the East Coast and med school in the West Coast, but, you know, I grew up in, you know, Ohio or Michigan, you know, I mean, around, you know, someone that we don't think of is going to be interested in us if they've got a tie or they have a, you know, someone that they know worked here or rotated here, you know, that you can try doing that through the program coordinator.
That's a great plan and a wonderful way to showcase your interest.
But be genuine.
Yes. And don't send the same email to everyone.
Yes.
So, you know, a large part of this entire process is the interview. And many specialties have residents meet with the interviewees the night before. But sometimes interviews can be different for every specialty. So I'm curious what a typical ophthalmology residency interview looks like and then how we should go about preparing for these interviews.
Yeah, so a typical, I can speak to what we do that I think is done most places. You know, we have a two-on-one, so two faculty for one resident. Our interviews have changed a little time slot-wise. We're about 20 minutes now. And you usually have, you know, 6 to 8 rooms, so with two faculty. So we try to get a lot of faculty to talk to you. And then we have resident time with the applicants, you know, in their, when they're rotating, kind of, you have like break room. So, you know, you have some time between rooms and then over lunch and tours and all that kind of stuff. I think, you know, what I hear from a lot of applicants, you know, in our own residents where they interviewed elsewhere, it's generally very collegial. There's not a lot of like, you know, people aren't going to ask you to recite esoteric facts about eye anatomy or carve, you know, things out of soap or these like horror stories you hear about some specialties. So generally, I think pretty nice and collegial. But I think one of the most universal things I hear is that people were surprised how much variety people they got asked about from their application. I mean, if it's on your application, you should know it and be ready to talk about it. I've had a lot of people say, boy, no one's ever really asked me about X, Y, or Z before, or they were impressed when they interviewed because, you know, some faculty asked about research and really hammered them, and the next room would ask about their hobbies and the next room about their volunteer. So be ready to talk about anything you list.
Yes, it does sound like the entire San Francisco Match application is at the hands of the interviewer. They can ask what they wish. You've put it in your application. So be honest and truthful about your experiences and then be passionate about what you have to say.
Right. Yeah. And be ready. I mean, people, you know, we have actually, he's one of our residents now, was a medical student at OSU also, and was a speed cuber. So Ooh. Rubik's Cube solving. And I mean, I was like, you know, you better be ready when, because people are going to ask. And he's like, oh, I have them in my pockets, you know, and he would just whip them out and solve, you know, and people would bring art or people have pictures of like, if you say jewelry, you know, I will ask you about it because, you know, my wife has an interest in jewelry. I, you know, so I do somewhat of well. So I'm like, oh, well, what are we talking about? You know, and some people are like, oh, well, this necklace I'm wearing or this ring I made, or here's some pictures on my phone. If you list magic, you should probably have a trick at the ready.
Oh, yes. Those are great tips and things to remember. So you have seen a lot of ophthalmology applicants over the years. And after seeing so many people come through your interviews, I'm curious if you have any pitfalls to share with us that we can avoid when we get to the interview and also on the application trail.
Yeah, the application itself, I would say one thing I always try to remind people is like blank space is bad. So, you know, if you can't fill the research section, let's say, then, you know, maybe write a little bit more about what you did for those projects. You know, if there's a publication or a project in, you know, in the works, you know, you can expound on that a little bit. You just don't want like us to flip a virtual page or a real page and see this whole section of blank space. I think that doesn't look great. So you can get creative with spacing. You can get creative with, you know, if you have a handful of awards or their scholarships, sometimes people will write, oh, you know, this was awarded based on, you know, X, Y, and Z, and it was so much money or whatever. Or if you volunteered, you know, it's one thing to say, I volunteered at the Ronald McDonald House from 05 to 15. It's another thing, you know, to say, these are what I did there. You know, you may not necessarily, you don't need to like go into full personal statement level detail, but try to flush out kind of things that are lacking maybe. Highlight yourself in publications. You know, you can do that just with simple things like bold and italics and things like that. And then from an interview standpoint, you know, like we touched on before, not knowing something, you know, we have a lot of pretty involved research kind of faculty who do clinical research and bench. And so they will ask people about their research. And if you don't know it, when we have our little round table, you know, someone will say, oh, did anyone ask about, you know, the research they were doing on, you know, fruit fly corneas or whatever. And someone will say, you know, they didn't really know what they didn't really understand the project or something like that. And that's not good. And then finally, be yourself. I mean, our approach to having a lot of faculty is everyone kind of asks different things, has different approaches. So we want to kind of learn all about you. And so if you're not yourself in, you know, if you're part of yourself in one room and a different part of yourself in a different room or a different version, you know, the faculty talk to each other and we kind of make this as a group, you know, sort of effort. So it's probably easiest to be yourself and then you're not contradicting yourself, you know, obviously no lies or half truths or anything like that. But being yourself, highlighting your, you know, what sets you apart, I think is kind of the biggest thing.
And one of the most important parts of this entire process is having mentors and support throughout this journey. So I'm curious if you have any tips to connecting with mentors in ophthalmology, especially for those applicants who may not have their own home program, or just in general, learning more about the field or finding any research opportunities.
Yeah, I think the last couple of years, the social media aspect of this has really exploded. Me being here is a pretty good example. I think you just, you know, sent out a tweet and listed me in it and here we are. And there, you know, I was actually involved in, you know, a kind of panel discussion for people without home ophthalmology programs that went viral. It was actually published in an academic journal. And it was literally just, you know, a couple of med students started kind of talking to each other through social media about, you know, how to do this. They had a faculty who was going to kind of mentor them and they're like, well, who else can we get? And they literally just started like, you know, tweeting at people with, you know, academic ophthalmologist program directors. And it just like exploded. I mean, there were hundreds of people on this, you know, call by the end of it. So reaching out to people, you know, if you have people from your med school who have matched in ophthalmology, if you don't have your own program, reaching out to them, you know, where they matched or what they did. And then, you know, there are now some formalized kind of virtual mentor programs that started kind of last year with some of the COVID lockdowns. So looking into some of that. And the American Academy of Ophthalmology has a mentorship program for underrepresented minorities. It's called the MOM program. I think it's Minority Ophthalmology Mentors. And so that's a pretty good opportunity as well. The same with research. I mean, just reaching out to anybody that you can. One of my virtual mentees, you know, ended up doing a research project with someone he only knew based like from Twitter. And they were just kind of started a conversation there and, you know, found some mutual interest and did research entirely virtually. So reaching out, you know, turning over every stone that you can, you know, going on websites, seeing if programs have virtual or away electives or virtual or away research years, you know, is a great way to kind of get tied in if you don't have a built-in program.
Those are all great tips. And it really has been so unique with COVID. There's been a lot of changes and some of those changes are positive in that we are all so engaged on social media, even more so than before. And it's exciting to see all the OptoMatch hashtags and all of the ophthalmology residents that are willing to lend a hand to the mentor those people that may not have a program or may not know much about the field and are eager to learn more.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch that develop. I mean, just the past year kind of really poured gas onto the fire. So.
And so this entire process can be really stressful and intimidating for a lot of people, but you have shared us so many tips about the San Francisco match and how it operates and how we can go about applying into ophthalmology. So I'm wondering if there's anything else you'd like to offer about the ophthalmology application or the residency interview process.
Yeah, I've got a couple of my highlights we didn't already touch on. And this is a great interview question. This is one of my favorite questions. Late in the season, late in the interview day, I'm one-on-one with applicants and I say, is there anything else like you want to know about that you wish someone asked you a question, an open door? I can't wait to talk about my, you know, glass blowing experience or something, you know, and you just haven't found that open. So it's a great open-ended question. My list, I love seeing people's what I quote, you know, real jobs. So there's a section on the SF Match, you know, list your work history. There's now a newer box that says like, is this related to, you know, ophthalmology or medicine or something like that. I want to know if you worked at McDonald's. I want to know if you were a server or a hostess, or worked customer service, worked at a, I mean, list that stuff on your application and I will ask you about it, I promise. The other thing is making sure you pay attention to details, chronological order, reverse chronological order, spelling, you know, I mean, it, like I said, there's a pile of applications and, you know, my job is as brutal as it sounds is to try to figure, you know, I mean, we can't interview 600 people. So I've got to get 600 down to 60 down to six. And so, you know, I mean, reverse chronological order means reverse. Chronological means, it's just a pet peeve. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just a little crazy, but pay attention to those details. And then the last thing I would say, not so much application, but when you're making your own rank list, is think about what you want in a training program. You know, do you want a name on your diploma that's important to you? Do you want a region of the country that's important to you? Do you want a program that you know you're going to get hands-on, you know, tons of experience? You know, picture what you want to be at the end. You know, you don't necessarily want an easy program where you don't really see many patients and it's more shadowing. I mean, maybe you think that you do, but then think about when you're done, you know, and you're on your own and there's no one to check patients out with, how do you think you would be best prepared? If that's different on your learning style, what you think you're comfortable with or can handle, you know, I think a lot of people want a program where you're going to see patients, you know, you're going to have VA experiences or county hospital experiences, you know, ask those questions like how do I see patients? Where do my surgeries come from? How many people am I going to be learning from? You know, really treat, you know, as much as we're interviewing you, you should also be interviewing the programs. You know, if you're getting an interview, that program thinks that you could be there, that you're competitive with everybody else. How we use it, once you're in the door for an interview, kind of the playing ground is leveled. And we treat all those people, you know, the same based on how things interview. So I like when people know about our program, when they ask, we can tell that they've done research on it. It's not just like they're looking at their hand, like what city am I in today? You know, they've researched our program, our faculty, they know what people do. They know what specialty people are. It shows a lot of interest in the program if you can have kind of higher level conversations, and then be picky for yourself, you know, ask things that you want to know. If diversity is important to you, ask what programs are doing. If research is important, ask how that works. Really kind of use part of your interview to learn more about the program.
Well, it really sounds like the San Francisco Match also has some really unique elements that other specialties may need to learn from. So I really love that question, especially about other work experiences, because some of us may not, you know, feel comfortable, you know, relaying that we worked at a fast food chain because we don't think it relates to our interest in a specific field like ophthalmology. But it's great to learn that the San Francisco Match application cares and that program directors want to know more than just medicine. And what we went to school for.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think medicine is certainly a big part of it, but in the end, I mean, medicine is customer service. I mean, ophthalmology is mostly outpatient, right? People come, they want to get along with you. You know, I asked somebody, I think in the last interview cycle, like, do you think you learn more, you know, he was some kind of like customer service facing person, a manager at something, or during your research year, you know? And I wanted him to say, you know, from the customers, because I mean, yeah, you learn how to do research and stuff, but your whole life is interacting with people. And you certainly do that more in a, you know, customer service kind of job. So even if it's not ophthalmology, I don't know if ERAS allows it or not, find some way to put that on your application. Program directors care about it.
Haven't seen it, but I definitely think that question is a great one and think that ERAS should consider adding it in.
Yeah.
And so Dr. Hendershot, we so appreciate all the facts and tips that you have shared about ophthalmology, but most importantly, can you share a fun fact about you?
Oh gosh, I got a lot of fun facts. I think the most fun and maybe timely is my wife and I had a little bit of a struggle with infertility. We were blessed with triplets. They're about to turn 10.
And
so when I'm done with you, we're going to go work on getting the party set up and celebrated. And then we also have a fourth child who's about 20 months younger. And we now are up to 4 pets, 2 dogs and 2 cats. So busy house, very blessed. And I guess that's maybe the most interesting thing about me.
Well, we so appreciate you spending your Saturday morning with us. And so that's all the time we have today with Dr. Hendershot. Thanks for joining us at Inside the Match. Special thanks to Kevin McLeod for the music, and be sure to follow or subscribe to our podcast. Catch our next podcast to learn more application tips and hear from another awesome leader in medical education.